You're listening to Sempre, the original and best SSC Napoli podcast for Pordenope around the world.
Benvenuti and ciao ragazzi, and welcome to another episode of Sempre, where tonight we'll reflect on our defeat away to Sampdoria, review our UEFA Champions League group stage draw, and take your questions on a packed Ask Sempre. Kirsten, Frank and the returning Marco D'Onofrio can't make it this evening. They do send you their best wishes, but tonight we'll line up with what can only be described as old school Sempre. As first I'm joined by Ken Chiffredi. Ken, how's things, mate?
Well, could be better after today, I think. Not the best day on the pitch, that's for sure.
And completing tonight's roster of ranters, it's Yonkers' finest, working hard as always, and hopefully a little more rested than last week. We say ciao to Rafa Rispo. Rafa, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for that intro. That was nice. I'm doing good. I'm very well rested today, although just got done with a very busy day of work, and luckily I wasn't able to focus on the game too much.
So has your agent been in touch regarding any more podcast appearances? Are we going to see you pop after I did enjoy your Facebook posts.
Yeah,
you were pimping yourself out. I thought you'd got yourself an agent at one point there, Rafa. So
I might have.
You done the rounds last week, mate.
Yeah, No, it was fun, but nothing, nothing left in the nothing yet. Maybe I picked the wrong agent.
So we'll kick things off, and hopefully, you know, people that have downloaded this are still with us by this point. A 3-0 defeat tonight away to Sampdoria, a game that, you know, may have stuck out in many people's minds as going to be a potential, you know, banana skin. I think we, you know, touched on it on the WhatsApp chat. One of these games where, you know, tragic circumstances bring a support and a club together and make it, you know, extremely difficult. You feel as if almost not kind of bad that you're going there to play a game of football, but you're up against a wave of emotion. And that wave of emotion sort of gives these players that extra, you know, edge. They already want to do better because, you know, they want to do it for the people in the city. So that's what we were up against. And Sampdoria were, to be fair to them, absolutely rampant.
Yeah, I think early on they were riding the wave pretty high. They score early, and after that they were able to take the foot off the gas a little bit, and they capitalized on all their opportunities, and we didn't. So, you know, it was a match where the pre-match things, everybody arm in arm, and the banners and everything. It was just, I think this is one of those matches where we didn't play well on the pitch, but it's one of those matches where I think it was also sort of written in the stars, if you will, that it wasn't going to be a result we were going to get today.
Yeah, absolutely. And it being Samp's official for home opener this week because of the fact that their actual home opener was canceled because of the bridge incident. Home versus Fiorentina was supposed to be, I believe. It made it that much more special for the Samp fans and the Samp players to get out there and you know, do what they do. And they've got a pretty decent little team there. You know, it's not like they're considered a slouch. When we looked at the fixtures when they were announced, we were like, well, geez, you know, I mean, and many other people too were not really putting us, you know, at the position that we're in, 6 points from two games. You know, and then we got to play Samp. Then we got to play, I believe it's Torino when we get back, or, Fiorentina. That's right. Right. You know, it's a tough couple of games until Juventus. As a matter of fact, the seventh match. So, you know, to that coupled with the fact that this was their home opener and they had a lot of emotion going in, and you know, you almost, like you said, Kenny, you feel, you know, like, well, okay, this is the just result for the team, and you know, we can give you this one, but you know, but it hurts either way. It's a stinger.
Yeah, De Frel opened the scoring in 11 minutes. A great strike, but defence posted missing, caught on the counter. Nothing Ospina could do about that. A great right foot finish right into the corner. De Frel again would make it 2-0 on 32 minutes. Again, defence posted missing. Now, I kind of originally wondered what the hell Albiol was doing, because he kind of goes out and then he retreats. But then, Kenny, you pointed it out in the chat that he's Albiol. He gets dragged out of position. So Albiol was kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. Does he go and try and close the ball down, or does he try and cover for Hisai? And I think he gets caught in two minds, and then he tries to make the block and the deflection takes it past Ospina. Although from that range, I don't think he would have saved it anyway. So we're thinking at that point, right, it's okay, we've been here before. It's all good. 2-0 down, we done it last week, can we do it again? And we couldn't. To be quite honest, we huffed and we puffed and we made some kind of bold changes. I mean, at half time, both Verdi and Insigne came off. A double substitution there. Unas came on and he was the kind of bright spark in the second half. He was taking men on in a halfway line, turning them well, using his upper body. You know, he was ghosting past people like they weren't there, but just sadly, no real end product. A couple of deflected chances that went just wide. I know Dries had a great chance, he weaved his way into the box and he just had it with his left foot really, you know, slow at the right at the goalkeeper. So, I mean, as time went on, you're going, it just wasn't going to be our night. But the one kind of moment that I think sticks out in the first half, and that came at 1-0. And Arik Milik is simply standing still and the goalkeeper comes out to try and deal with a cross. And he just literally flaps at it, falls all over the place, and Arik flicks it into the empty net, and the ref gives a foul.
Yeah, that changed the game, I think, in my opinion. It changed the complexion of the whole game. I think, you know, we tie the score there 1-1, and I think we might have a different, maybe not necessarily a different outcome, but at least changes your mindset that, you know, we got one back pretty quickly. Milik doesn't do anything wrong there. He's standing his ground. The goalkeeper jumps over the back of him, fumbles into him, misses the ball, and then Arik just, you know, clips it into the back of the net, and no foul. I mean, no reason why there should be a foul there for me. And I think that I was a little surprised that the Napoli players didn't chirp about it at all. But I think, you know, it's one of those weird games. The first goal, we get, you know, caught out on the counter, and, you know, that happens. But, you know, it's one of those things where you're just wondering where anybody is. I know it came off of a set piece, and it's just one of those weird situations where we don't win the first ball, and then all of a sudden all the players that were forward for the free kick are now on the other end of the field, and De Frel has always had a good turn of pace, and, you know, we could just get sort of caught with our pants down there. The second goal, like you said, we pretty much, if Hisai stays with his man, we pretty much have everything covered there. I think it's pretty, you know, they get a decent chance, and Hisai comes running over to cut the ball down, and then Albiol just sort of looks over, and he's like, oh, shit. De Frel's wide open. The ball comes over to him, and then to Albiol's credit, he does get his body on it, but just can't block it away. And, you know, I think you're right, though. Unas has to be, you know, sort of our, in a 3-0 defeat, it, you know, not really a consolation, but he gets sort of the man of the match. I think he was driving them absolutely crazy the second half. He was our best player, aside from Alan, who I still think has been consistently our best player so far. But I think Ancelotti has some questions that he needs to answer, and I think my prediction is that this will be the last time we set up 4-3-3. That's just my opinion.
Well, where was VAR on that first the goal that could have been 1-1? Because if he did nothing wrong, or if a foul was called on a goal scoring situation, shouldn't a VAR have stepped in? Unless they did step in and just didn't give the goal to Milik.
To be fair, Arik only clips it in after the whistle's gone. It's not as if it was like a more like a. You know, it was a nice finish, nice little kind of back heel flick that he does, but he does nothing wrong. The goalkeeper makes an absolute arse of it. He's all over the place. Literally, Milik doesn't jump, doesn't challenge, doesn't change his body shape, doesn't lean in, doesn't put his arms up, nothing. He just stands there, and the goalkeeper panics, and he's jumping all over the back of him, fumbles it, falls on his backside, And then the whistle goes, and then Milik just kind of flicks it in anyway, almost to say, well, look what I could have done. But it was a ridiculous decision. So I don't know why the whole VAR thing, I don't know. It's still that kind of grey area. When do they use it? Is there someone watching that tells the referee they can use it? Or does the referee want to look at it? Is he happy that he's made the right decision, that the linesman's made the right decision?
The mysteries of VAR.
The mysteries of VAR, volume 352. But no, it's annoying, just because you're thinking, as you say, it's a kind of quick response. At 1-1, it would have been interesting to see what happened, but there was still kind of plenty of time at that point. But Unas, I do agree, was the kind of real, you know, bright point. Just as I said, he was telling the people that they weren't there.
Yeah,
but I think
it was like FIFA. It was literally like watching someone play FIFA in real life. The way I was very impressed.
Holding L2 to shield the ball, then spin around the back.
Yep.
There you go.
It just makes you think about, you know, losing a whole year of his progression and where he'd be. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to hearken on the past, and we're not going to go there, especially because we lost today, but just makes you wonder, that's all.
I mean, the question I asked on the WhatsApp chat, and, you know, Frank quoted it and, you know, said that he agreed, and I think it's just my opinion, I think it's quite glaring, is that Ancelotti doesn't know his best 11 yet and doesn't know his best formation yet.
Yep.
Right.
It's not too different from when Sadi took over, and I know we keep drawing these parallels, and, you know, one of my friends pointed out that when Sadi took over, it was a team with 65 points, and Ancelotti's taking over a team that just had 91 points. But I still think these things remain parallel regardless of what position you take over a team in. He's implementing new systems. They're not all going to get on board right away. I think some of the players that have been fixtures in the past are not going to be fixtures moving forward, and I think some of the new players are going to require new wrinkles to make them more impactful. And I think when Sadi came, he was really married to a 4-3-1-2 formation. I don't, you know, he was really, really married to that sort of formation. And it's the same formation that Giampaolo uses, actually, which is funny because the Empoli connection and all the rest of that. But after mm-hmm. his rough patch, he switched to a 4-3-3, and that is sort of what bloomed into Sadi ball. You know, and I think Ancelotti is going through the same type of growing pains. He's taking over a system that was 4-3-3. He's trying to get everybody into the right places, but I think 4-2-3-1 is probably going to be the formation we go to before too long, and I wouldn't be shocked if it's right after the international break. I think given the players and the personnel he has at his disposal, right, you lose Jorginho, who is arguably the best at his position in the world, and you have to make some sort of compensation for that, and whether that's going 4-2-3-1 and just having Zielinski and Allen be those two further back, or Fabian or whoever that person is to go with Allen. You have one person who's breaking up play and one person to shuttle the ball forward. And I think it's been evidenced the past two games that there needs to be a player closer to Eric Milik because he's just not getting the service that he needs. Or he plays really well with Mertens, and I think whether that player is Mertens or if it's Zielinski or if it's Hamsik or if it's Verdi or if it's Unas, whoever that player is that plays in behind him, I think it's necessary that someone gets in there. I think we're just a little too – I think we're trying to play a little too fast right now. We're just sort of like getting the ball and trying to get it up the field as fast as possible, and I think it's just been a little clunky. And I think that 4-2-3-1 gives us a little bit more balance, and I think that when we get back into our defensive shape, it doesn't leave us as cockeyed as we've been either.
Kenny, I agree with that 100%.
No, spot on. Absolutely spot on. Yeah. I mean, it was quite strange not seeing Marek Hamsik on the field at all.
It was bizarre
tonight. It was really strange.
I was also trying to go back and see when was the last game that Callejon didn't play in at all, that he wasn't either suspended or injured. And I couldn't get there, but I was trying to find it. If I can find it tonight, I'll put it on Twitter. But I think it has to be at least 3 or 4 years ago, if I'm being brutally honest. And not counting a cup match, like a Serie A game.
Well, he played. He was ever present under Sarri. I mean, that's why we called him Iron Man on here. But you know, talking of Callejon, I know he's got his haters, but I think you've seen tonight what he brings.
Yeah,
we lacked a severe, you know, presence down that right hand side. That level of work rate, that option as an out ball. I know Verdi and Insigne had that link up in pre-season. Again, not against the greatest opposition and not competitively, but you know, Callejon, just the work rate he's got up and down that right hand side, the cover that he provides when Hisai goes forward, it is great to see Verdi getting a start and getting to show us what he can do, and it's great to see Unas come on as well and also take that place and on the right hand side and play as he did. You know, and we cried out for squad rotation and, you know, to use the guys that are available, and Ancelotti is doing that. But I mean, my God, we miss Callejon.
Yep.
And it might not be a popular opinion, you know, given that he does split the support, but you know, for me it was glaring. He was noticeable by his absence, and I said that on my own Twitter account tonight.
So here's the question I have for you guys, actually. If you know, we were crying out for squad rotation, we got it, but I mentioned it last week on the shows I appeared on, and because everybody asked me, you know, where's Verdi, where's, you know, Fabian, where are your new players, and the answer I had for them was, you know, well, we'll get the rotation when we need it. You know, right now we don't need it. Champions League doesn't start till after the break. Coppa Italia is not till December. There's no real need for it at the moment. What's working is working. So do you guys think that Ancelotti changing it up a bit, you know, the Callejon and Hamsik decision to sit them, is better? That is it better that he did it now before the international break, or should he have waited till we actually needed to rotate, like possibly, you know, play these guys against Fiorentina at home before the Red Star match, or even like during the Red Star match, because it's, you know, not, no disrespect to Red Star, they're champions.
Kirsten's going to come after you, dude. You better watch it.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Kirsten, no disrespect at all, but you know, just wondering what was this a good move for Ancelotti? Because I at first I'm like, well, why? You know, thinking to myself while I see, you know, and mind you, I turn the game on and I'm just hearing on the TV like, okay, this is, you know, Hamsik didn't start and Callejon didn't start, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Like, had no chance to check the formation before the game, nothing. So I'm like, why all these changes now when we are on a roll and we're going into an international break? There's no real need for this rotation.
Well, for me anyway, to be fair, we were not good the first half of the first two matches at all. So I think that's probably part of it. And I think another part of it is, right, if you don't play someone like Verdi or you don't get a little bit of rotation in, you're talking about a full month into the season without these guys seeing one competitive minute, and then you're going to throw them in either in Champions League or in another meaningful match. So I don't think there's a right or wrong way. I thought, given the way we played in the first half against Milan and against Lazio, that it wasn't unwarranted, but with the new manager, he has to sort of see what he's got and take sort of account on the field in competitive matches what these players have to offer. And I think that now he's got a little bit of egg on his face, but I don't think the difference in the match is because of the rotation. That's just where I'm at with it. I don't think, maybe Callejon makes a difference, but we weren't overly impressed with Hamsik in that role, and I don't think Diawara played very well today either. I think that might just come down to changing the tactics a little bit.
Right, and I'm sorry, I'm not necessarily, you know, questioning Ancelotti's methods. I just was trying to figure out why he would do something like that before the international break, and then, you know, later on it dawned on me that, like you said, you know, you got a guy like Verdi who was not called up to the national team this go around, so he'll be sitting for another 2 weeks, like you said, and it just, I don't know. I think to myself, if we'd started the same team, maybe got Mertens off the bench, moved him up a little bit, put Diawara in fresh in the second half, like we did the last few games, it might have come, you know, to where we come back, come from behind and win. But, you know, like you said, Ancelotti's feeling his team out, and it, better to do it early than later, I guess, right?
He's not done this for any kind of reasons like rest. You know, we've always been saying for years, you know, Callejon needs a rest. I don't think it's anything to do with these guys coming in because the other two guys needed a rest. I think he is pretty much experimenting. It's a combination of experimenting with the squad and what you touched on there, Kenny. I think it is that he knows the break's coming up. There's 2 weeks away and there's certain players who have come in who haven't seen a single minute. So, you know, let's put them in there and see what they can do, maybe so Ancelotti can assess them before the break so we can try and work on things during the break for when we come back for that match against Fiorentina at home. It's just, he doesn't know his best 11, he doesn't know his best formation. I don't think he'll be long in figuring that out. I hope he's not long in figuring that out, because, I mean, these games are going to start coming thick and fast, you know, whenever we come back from the break.
Yeah.
You know, just looking at it, I mean, we've got Fiorentina whenever we come back. The Champions League starts, what, end of September?
I think it's that week.
No, it starts right after the Fiorentina game. Yep.
Yeah, it is. 18th of September. So we come back, it's Fiorentina at home, Red Star Belgrade away, and then you come straight back off of that to Torino away. So, you know, the other kind of thing that was mentioned, and I've seen some tweets about it, and I did bring it up with you guys before we started recording, was that to compare the number of goals that we had conceded in the first three games of last season compared to this season, and I think the number was 2, because it was Hellas Verona away, Atalanta at home, and then Bologna away, and it was 3-1, 3-1 and 6-0, if I remember. But you can't really compare playing those three teams to start with under a manager's third season to playing Lazio away, Milan at home and Sampdoria away under a new manager who's still feeling his way around the squad. Yeah. So it's kind of, it's an unfair comparison, that one.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a little bit of parity going on in Serie A at the start of this season. I think every team that finished in the top six bar Juventus has lost a game so far in the first three. Every single one. Us, Lazio, Milan, Inter, Roma, all lost. So it's been a little weird. You know, I think the only other team that hasn't lost yet is, besides Juventus, is Fiorentina, if I'm not wrong. So, and they've only played twice.
Fiorentina only played twice, right.
So it's
the mighty Sassuolo haven't lost a game according to the table I'm looking at.
Yeah, it's two wins and a draw. So
yeah,
it's been a little weird. It's been a little weird. So, you know, it's not an excuse, and it's not, you know, we're not here making excuses. They played like crap today, and that's the bottom line. But, you know, we have to give this a little bit of time to sort of sort itself out. I think it's better that we go through the growing pains now than fall off in January or, you know, in March or something like that. But only time will tell. I think that given some time, and I think this international break, you know, you say it after a loss every time, is coming at the right time. Gives Ancelotti a little bit of time to iron out his tactics and give some of these injured players like Goulam and Medet a little bit of time to sort of hopefully get right to match fitness. I think they're talking about last week of September, first week of October, for those two and for Yunus as well, which is kind of crazy to think about. I know they initially said he was going to be out until January, but he seems like he's just about ready to come back. So I do think that's another proponent to sort of go in 4-2-3-1. There's all these attacking players, and you have to figure out ways to fit these guys in.
Now, Yunus is making all the right noises on social media. He's getting involved and he's taking his photographs around the city and using the old Forza Napoli Sempre hashtag and things like that. So let's hope, you know, after the circus that followed him, you know, last year, that he does put it all behind him and puts out some performances on the park. But as you said, where the hell do we fit him? We've got an abundance of midfield and attacking players. It's just trying to figure out where the hell they're meant to play. But we won't dwell on the Sampdoria game any longer. It's 25 minutes. That's more than enough for a match review with no goals in it for us. Jesus.
Yes.
Let's move on to the Champions League draw, the highlight of last week. So, just going to get the obvious one out of the way. Cavani's coming home, but not in our shirt.
No, so, he's not.
Paris Saint-Germain came out of pot one, ourselves from pot two. Liverpool found themselves in pot three, which was absolute madness considering they were a finalist last year. And Red Star Belgrade, of course, coming out of pot four. Some dubbing this one the group of death, but I mean, if you look around, there's a fair few groups in that, much like last season, where the quality of teams up against each other is absolutely ridiculous. So, looking at it and being bluntly and coldly honest, the favourites to get out of that group are Paris Saint-Germain and Liverpool. You know, if you look at the firepower and the money that PSG have got, Liverpool being last year's finalists and losing that game in the manner that they did with Karius making those mistakes, although Alisson at the weekend for Liverpool was a little bit funny to watch, but as was Jurgen Klopp's reaction. He gave him an absolute bollocking for the sideline. It was quite funny. Never seen Klopp quite lose it like that in the touchline before, but it was quite funny. And obviously Red Star Belgrade have got a bit of a connection to ourselves with Kirsten. That's the city she's based in, isn't it now?
Yes.
Belgrade.
Yep.
So, you know, our listeners have got some kind of expert analysis on them as well. So that kind of gives us a nice little edge as a podcast as well to have someone who knows that club inside out. So we need to make sure she's available for the shows whenever they're playing.
Yeah.
Even for a review or something. But no, it's great. A bit of torn, not torn loyalties, but I think whenever the draw was made on the WhatsApp chat, we did see Kirsten just write the word no with lots of O's.
I think there's a lot of interesting groups, right? Group B has Inter and from pot four, so Barcelona, Tottenham, PSV and Inter. Group H, jeez. Juventus, Man U and Valencia all grouped together. Group
That's an easy draw for them.
Yep. Group E.
Man U are...
Yeah, crap. Man U have been... I know they won today, 3-0, but they're a club in turmoil, I think. I think you could probably tip Valencia maybe to sneak out of that group, if I'm being honest. You know, You got Group E as Man City, Shakhtar, Lyon, and Hoffenheim, so I think Man City still favorites to get out, but the rest of it I think is up for grabs, and even... You know, I still think our group is the toughest. Some people say the one with the Inter is tougher, but I don't think so. I think the top three are ridiculous. I think we did. Now it's my turn to make Kirsten upset. I do think that we got the bit, aside from that physical draw, the way the fixtures came out, I think that having Red Star first gives us a little bit of a breather because you can say Liverpool play PSG right away and someone or both teams are going to drop points and gives us an opportunity against Liverpool at home to potentially open up a gap right away. Whether that is, you know, get it. If we can beat Liverpool and win in Belgrade, we are off to a very good start. And then we can give ourselves a little bit of margin of error as we get into the back-to-back with PSG. I think we still think we're good enough to beat any team in the world at home. And I still think that if we get off to a good start, we can make it out of the group, but it's not going to be easy.
No, it's not going to be easy. I remember last season being quite happy with the first game being away.
We were so optimistic last season's group.
Oh yeah, it was incredible. And look how that turned out.
We also didn't give a crap about the Champions League last year. To be fair,
that's true. But I don't believe early on the mind frame was let's tank Champions League. I think with the Milik injury and the Gulam injury, I think, you know, the Gulam injury was a little late, but I think after Milik, we were kind of like, all right, maybe we should reshuffle the, you know, whatever. it's going to be, you know, listen, we got to go all the way over to Belgrade. It's that traveling is tough midweek anyway, but, you know, the chances of coming back to the second match, against Liverpool at home with a win and a possible one of those two teams having a loss, hopefully it's Liverpool. So that if we beat them, now they're down, now we're up 6 points on them. You know, that would be an excellent turn of events for us.
Yeah, even a draw would put us 5 points clear. I think the winning the first match and any type of negative result for Liverpool will give us a big opportunity to open up a gap, and that's the way we got to take it. We got to just win our first two matches, and then we can worry about PSG when they come in November.
Yeah, because even if we can get a point from PSG's two games, let's be realistic, the home fixture, a point, and then maybe lose in Paris, we'd end up 7 points. You know, the only thing is that Liverpool will play Red Star twice. So, I mean, you know, it would just be a better situation if we were to win our first match and then, you know, be able to play. Hopefully PSG takes care of Liverpool, which I believe would be in England, if I'm not mistaken.
Match day six is at Liverpool, yep.
Oh, match day six is at Liverpool.
Yeah, we're away to Liverpool on match day six.
So Liverpool... Oh, I'm talking about Paris. I think the Paris-Liverpool match is in England to open up, right?
Not checked
it. It should be, because if they're playing against us second match in São Paulo, I think they'd be opening up in England. But either way, you know, PSG's a far better team than Liverpool, if you ask me.
Oy.
And hopefully they can get it. Nah, I think
hot
so.
Take.
Hopefully they can.
Ooh.
I mean, okay, Liverpool were finalists last season, and they won their first four matches as well. But I think PSG is.
I think PSG has the best attack in the world, but I think going back from
box
that
to box, you think Liverpool?
I think my hot take is we still have the best midfield of the four teams involved. PSG has the best attack. And I think you could probably make a case with Alisson, his mistakes notwithstanding from this weekend, that Liverpool are probably the most solid from in the back four. That's just they have a great offense as well. You know, Salah, Sané, Firmino, whoever else they want to throw in there. But I think that we have if we can get our act together personnel-wise, we have the best midfield in the group. I think PSG's attack is horrifying to look at and think about Neymar and Mbappe.
Yeah, but ours can be two though, Kenny. Ours can be all.
Yes, but we're not. I think PSG has two of the top, the two of the five best. I think with all three, they have three of the best top ten players in the world: Neymar, Mbappe, yeah, and Cavani. I don't think even on our best day we're not there. Even when, you know, even if you think Callejon, Milik, or Mertens and Insigne, we have. I don't think we're quite there. I think our attack is great when it's clicking, but I don't think we're on Neymar, Mbappe, Cavani level.
Well, I'm going to chime in and say that I think Liverpool's the most terrifying team in the group. So, I know PSG have got that whole Neymar, Mbappe, Cavani thing, but, you know, whenever you do watch Liverpool, whenever that front three, that Sané, Firmino and Salah, whenever they click, they're more of a unit. The other three for PSG seem to play within themselves, for themselves at times. Just the kind of impression I get, they're all, apart from Cavani, the other two are utterly selfish. But the Liverpool front three, whenever they get going, it's just a unit. They're unselfish, their pace is frightening. But the thing that I'm happy at is after the pre-season gubbin that they gave us, is that, and I said this way back, check the WhatsApp, I said that wouldn't it be nice if we drew Liverpool so we could show them the real Napoli? My exact words.
I think that there's no chance they beat us that badly again. I think that. I also think that that's sort of classic locker room poster board material, right? When you're playing Liverpool. Remember when they beat us 5-1 in preseason and everybody was talking garbage? It's time to show them what we're about. And we've already beaten Klopp at São Paulo with a very good team at his disposal. So, and it also made for one.
That's true, James.
It also made for one of the best gifts of all time. If you go back and see Klopp losing his mind on the touchline.
James mentioned, when you mentioned, I don't think I've ever seen Klopp lose it on the sideline like that.
Yeah, that gift came to mind.
Watch after the Insigne free kick.
It was pretty animated at Alisson. I mean, people were talking, just kind of like, this is the thing that annoys me, because a lot of the kind of Premier League fans were going, oh, look, it's you know, Karius Alisson and all this kind of, they were throwing all these ridiculous nicknames at him. And right, I thought it was quoted as being, oh, what a howler, right? It's not a howler. He's not dropped it or flung it at his own goal. What he's tried to be is a complete and utter smartass and dribble it past somebody, do a Cruyff turn and get robbed. So it wasn't really a clanger. It was just a case of, you know, a goalkeeper doing what they shouldn't be doing. And I think we all see it. He fancies himself as a bit of an
outfield player.
Yeah. It reminds me of that kind of the goalie at five aside who decides, you know what, give me a shot outfield. Proceeds to lose the ball, costs his team a goal, and then sheepishly walks back towards the goal and says, give me the gloves back, I'll just go back and goals.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but I think it's a very interesting group. It's the classic Napoli group. What are the two teams that you don't want to see from the top, you know, if you have to pick two teams you want to avoid, who are they? And we're like, well, PSG probably, you don't want Cavani to come back, and we definitely don't want to see Liverpool, and of course, that's the way the group falls. It's just like when we had Arsenal and Dortmund, you know, and Man City and Bayern. So it is what it is. Nobody thought we had a chance in that group against Man City and Bayern, and we got out of that group too. So we shouldn't lose, and we're a much better team now than we were then. So I think that we should.
You imagine we get 12 points and not make it out of this group again.
That's what I was just going to get to that.
Because I had said, you know, it'd be nice if we. At least if we get out of the group, if we have to be eliminated, we get eliminated third, finishing 12 points and missing out by a goal. And now it's like, it's that could actually happen again. It's ridiculous.
It could.
We always sort of get the shaft. And the one season that we're like, oh, it's a decent draw. We should get out. We completely shit the bed.
Well, there's nothing we can do about it. So, thanks, Benfica. Thank you. This is all your fault. If Benfica loses, then we don't see Liverpool. Sure. But it is what it is. Right. Now, if we're gonna pull out our crystal balls, we finish third and then we draw Chelsea, right, in Europa League. Is that what happens next?
That would be the
yeah. But we whip Chelsea and we win the Europa League. Oh. Come on!
There we go. I don't want any part of the Europa League.
Give me that Europa League.
No, I'd rather finish fourth in the group than go to the Europa League. I'm over the Europa League. It's garbage.
And there's me doing somersaults because Rangers qualify for it, and Kenny's just pissed all over it.
No, we get Rangers in the first round. Geez. Oh, no.
Yeah. Rangers only get out of that group. Right? Let's just... I think it's suffice to say that we're not getting out of that group, so... No danger of Rangers meeting Napoli in any Europa League stage.
Are you saying there's no Ranger danger?
Oh, boom. Brum. Hell of a draw. We'll see what happens. But that whole scenario where three teams finish on 12 points and you go out by a goal, that just, you just looking at that on paper, that just screams that kind of potential setup. With Red Star,
but I really
going to be in a dark
I really
course.
Like, yeah, I and I really liked what was it with the Kenny? You sent us this. You said, you know, we're not the only team that has to worry about teams that we're playing against around Champions League, because Liverpool's got it pretty tough.
Yeah, Liverpool's stretch coming up is absolutely ridiculous. So if anybody wants to, everyone thinks we have a tough schedule coming up. I got to find the picture and see if I can find it later on, and I'll come back to it, but. Liverpool's upcoming fixture list, I think, for the next couple of weeks is ridiculous. 15th of September to 7th of October for Liverpool. Spurs away, PSG home, Southampton home, okay. Chelsea at home, Carabao Cup. Chelsea away, Premier League. Napoli away, Champions League, Man City at home. So we are sandwiched between Chelsea and Man City for them. And I know we have...
Well, Chelsea twice. They play Chelsea, then
yep.
us.
So it's going to be a tough sledding for a lot of the teams involved. Maybe PSG, not as much. We all know the reputation of the French league, and I don't think it's as bad as people say, but, you know, I think that... Also think that the other two teams that are going to be gunning to win the group, Liverpool and PSG, are going to be thinking the same thing about drawing us as we are thinking about drawing them. I really do think that. They're not going to be a walk in the park for anybody.
I'm just looking at that fixture list for Liverpool. Bloody hell. Jesus.
No, I mean, to be, we have mental. Juve. We have Juve the weekend before we play Liverpool at home. But then we have Sassuolo after, which you know, if, based on Sassuolo's form, is it looks pretty tough. But I think that's really the toughest of what we've got, because we've got, then we have Udinese, PSG, Roma, which, you know, that could be tough too. I mean, it's all tough.
It's not that tough, because we're going to beat Roma at home because I'm going to be there, period.
Oh, sure. That's yeah, it. Definitely. So, well, we better beat Roma at home. We need to avenge last season. And then, you know, Empoli, PSG, Genoa, Chievo's Red Star, Atalanta, Frosinone, Liverpool, Cagliari. So really, you know, the toughest for me, I think, is the Juve, Liverpool, Sassuolo set of fixtures. That Liverpool jam up is insane. That's an absolute... They have to play Chelsea twice in two different... They have to play three different competitions inside a week. Yeah.
Chelsea twice, then us, then Man City. Crazy talk.
Yeah, nuts.
Good luck. So, that takes us on nicely to the final segment then of this weekend's show, which is, of course, Ask Sempre. So, we've got five questions here. First up, a good friend of the show, Richard Carman, host or co-host of the brilliant...
Congratulations, Richard, by the way. Congratulations. Yes. On Proud Papa.
Yeah, you can now join
Big Papa.
Join the club of pain, trying to fit in podcasting with parenting.
We had a nice conversation on Serie A Sit Down about it, and you know, I mentioned to them how incredibly hard it is to schedule podcasting around life and kids just like throws an extra monkey wrench in there.
We've got six or seven people now on the roster. They still just got the two of them. So, geez, Louise.
Sure.
Madness. But Richard says, how confident are you ahead of the draw with Liverpool and PSG in the same group, which we just touched on, which he says, where could Napoli realistically place? So I'm going to be disgustingly negative and say third.
I say we finish second in the group. One of the other big teams is on the outside looking in, and it's not us for once.
I'm going to hot take and say we win the group. This is my hot take. Hot take of the century.
Booyah! Rafa's good.
My hot take on Serie A Sit Down was Torino win the Scudetto.
I think... What? I think it wasn't actually... It got twisted. His words got twisted.
It did get twisted.
Rafa needs to call his agent. He's been misquoted. Twisted.
I think
I was misquoted. Well, Richard. It was actually you, Richard, who did that. I'd said that Torino might contend, possibly challenge for a fourth place spot, but I thought they'd finish fifth or sixth because you know, they've been playing really well.
Won again today too.
And yeah, and Richard was like, you know, mark this date on the calendar. Rafa's hot take is Torino win the Scudetto. But no, my hot take is they win the group. I think really, if we're firing on all cylinders, I think we can win the group. I really do. When we first got this draw, I was shaking my head and saying typical Napoli. But I really, really do think that if we can beat Red Star twice, if we can beat Liverpool and tie them, so and then you know, maybe lose one to PSG and tie, we can possibly win the group. Let Liverpool and PSG kill each other, and then I'm sorry, Kirsten, but Red Star is getting 0 points in this group.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Man. Oh jeez, that's it. You've just jinxed it. That's no, it. Rafa's just humped it.
We're getting a draw match day one.
Sensational score coming in here. It's Red Star 2, Napoli 1. Oh, shit. Thank you for the jinx there, Rafa. That's us humped.
You're
But just to kind of quickly touch on one of your other appearances that you made last week, where you agreed with the Milan Weekly pod guys that if Higuain...
I didn't agree.
You did.
I said.
No,
we would,
you did.
I said we'd negotiate further, and I've heard nothing from Il Presidente or Mr.
Yeah,
because
they're
Vince,
just waiting.
So.
They're just waiting for it to happen. And
they have it.
Gonna,
it's on. It is on there.
It's on record.
Accepted. It's on. It's on. It's on record.
I did. What I did say was Higuain needs to get the match winner, and then we'll discuss it.
So if he does, you're now going to disgrace our timeline. A picture of the Sempre crew wearing a Higuain
jersey. They told
jersey.
Me I have to say I love this jersey and kiss it as well. That's going too far. That's going way
See,
too far.
See, the thing is, you really should have tried to come back with some form of
counter.
Counter
offer. If Napoli sweep,
well,
then they gotta, you know, do something. I don't know what it is, but we don't have a personal stake in it, but you know,
they ambushed you.
Someone's got to get a Gattuso jersey and spray paint it blue.
We're still in negotiations. I'll send a message.
Didn't
you
hear
later.
No damn negotiations on that recording? I was like, to Kenny on WhatsApp, man. You come to just us, agreed to
Milan
wear a...
Pod. You come to us.
Aye.
We're negotiating now officially.
Those guys were very cool. I really liked I liked being on their show, and they were talking about possibly coming down for the Milan match, and that'd be something really
cool.
With a
camera and a Higuain jersey.
Yeah, ready for you to wear.
Yeah, for me to take a nice
all nicely pressed. Pump on. It's just sitting there on the table, pressed, waiting for you. Aye, well done. Hoodwinked into that one. So, next question is Payman Dadgar. He says number. He's actually cheated, by the way. He's put three questions.
You got three questions
in one tweet.
On there, dude. Come on now.
Aye, come on now. But we will answer all three. So the first one, new stadium update. We don't really have anything. We're not privy to any confidential club information.
Yeah. All I do know is that they said they were going to put the club in arrears and wait for the payment, and they never said anything else. So they must have gotten paid, them being the city. So.
Yeah. Yeah, the city must have got.
Yeah, there
paid.
Was no new developments, and we touched on it a lot last week.
Yeah, we did a pretty in depth and pretty serious chat on the stadium last week, and don't get me wrong, if anything new comes up, we will cover it. But the only news that has broken since we did cover it last week was that the city were prepared to put the club into arrears over the Milan game, which they'd played like 36 hours prior. And trying
ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, just childish, and we said
it's all posturing. It's all posturing. Yeah.
Both sides are equally to blame, and I think the silence that's followed this week maybe suggests that finally, you know, they've put their heads together around a table and finally, you know, thrashed out some kind of deal or whatever it is in private, because there's no need to air that crap publicly. We know we need a new stadium, or we need the San Paolo properly, you know, renovated, and something's going to have to give at some point. I mean, ADL has been saying for years he's going to. This goes back to October 2015. He's made threats about if you don't do this, we're going to move. So we're not going to get anywhere any quicker. If we do get any updates that we see, then we will obviously touch on it. Question number two from Payman says, League versus Champions League, are we going to try and win the league, or is the priority to get out of the group stages, which is better financially?
I think unlike the last couple of years, I think we're going to try to do both. We're going to try to, I think the objective is always to try to win the league, right? I don't think anyone goes into the season saying, we're not going to really try to win the league, but we'd like to finish in the top four. I think we're going to do our best to win the league. That might find us in the top four. And I think we're actually going to try to get out of this group, this tough, tough group. I think I don't think we're going to see a full-on sabotage of the Champions League like we did last year. I guess I'll say that. That will be my answer, my official answer.
Yeah, and we've said it before. As long as we give it a good shot, you know, it doesn't matter if we come in third, fourth in Serie A. It doesn't matter if we, you know, of course we want to win these competitions. That goes without saying. But, I mean, if we give a good show, to where people, you know, not that what the opinion of other people really doesn't matter, but they don't have that, you know, that ammo to go, oh, well, Napoli don't care about the Champions League. So, the, you know, or Napoli, you know, tank the Champions League to win the Scudetto and can't do that either. As long as we give it a good fight in each, I'm cool with it, you know. And like you said, I think we will. And it's the Ancelotti factor. He won't let us just, you know, skip out on a competition. He'll give it his all in every single one of them.
No, great stuff. And Michael Lisi says, after two games under Ancelotti, have your season expectations changed at all? And if so, by how much? To me, his use of depth of this roster could result in a special season. His best teams at Milan had midfield depth aplenty, and this team at Napoli is no different. Well, we kind of he did ask that 3 days ago, so I wonder if his questions possibly changed after this evening's showing. I mean, we've already covered that really in the match review. I mean, we've seen Unas come on, we've touched on Yunus is still to come back, Fabian Ruiz is still to get a game, you know, so there's plenty of depth there. I think, as we touched on, the only thing we don't know is how he's going to fit them all in and what shape he's going to use.
Yeah, I think that this is, assuming that Ghulam comes back, I think this team is, and is, you know, is 80-90% what he was. I think this team's depth is pretty darn good. I know Mario Rui didn't have the best game today, but I think he's been pretty solid overall in cover. And I think that the midfield options and the attacking options are pretty vast. So I think as long as Ghulam comes back healthy and, the you know, Fabian hasn't seen a minute yet, and I think that he might be the, you know, the key to unlocking something special in that midfield. I think that wherever he slots in is going to be pretty special. I think that he might unseat Zielinski as well as he has played in spurts to start the season. I think Zielinski might be getting the boot in the long term by Fabian. I think that he's going to end up being our best midfield acquisition in quite some time. I really do.
Yeah, and I believe that, you know, based on the first two matches, the way we were able to come back from behind twice, you know, it didn't happen today, and it's not going to happen every time, you know, it just is not. And the fact that this is such a feel-out period for Ancelotti as well, you know, I don't think that, like, you know, if you look at the first two matches, and you're thinking optimism, okay, you know, we're going to finish out this Serie A season strong. We're going to be top two, you know, all that stuff. And then, you know, then this loss comes in and it really puts you back into perspective. Like, okay, this is seriously a feel out, you know. Listen, we were slated to be worse off than we are now, according to most pundits out there. You know, we weren't supposed to beat Lazio. We weren't supposed to beat Milan. You know, we should have like 1 point according to these pundits out there. And we have six from nine. And when Sadi began, he had 6 points from 15. So for us to match that, we'd have to lose our next two games as well. And I think we're going to be just fine. You know, like we said earlier, we're a 91-point team going into a new season with a new manager who's testing it out, but that manager is Carlo Ancelotti, one of the most decorated and successful managers in Italian football. And there's no reason to panic from this loss. There's no reason to really, you know, have a reason to believe that we're not going to do well this season. We're definitely going to finish Champions League positions.
Good stuff. And finally, to wrap up this week's Ask Sempre, we have Nick Ignorato, who says, given how Cavani was booed every time he touched the ball last time he came to San Paolo, does he get an ovation this time? And if he does it happen if Higuain never left the way he did?
Nah, he gets the ovation. He's come out multiple times saying that, you know, praising the Napoli fans, praising the city, saying if he's coming back to Italy, it's to Napoli, you know, not ruling out a return. I really think he's done a good job since he left for PSG to win the fans' heart. Whether Higuain leaves or not, you know, I'm not sure how I know I felt, you know, I've always had an admiration for Cavani even when he left, so I wasn't part of that crowd that would have booed him. I'd have cheered him. You know, it stung when he left, but you know, you have to understand that this is football. This is going to happen. Someone said it on another show. I think I heard you just, this is why you don't fall in love with players, is because this kind of stuff will happen. You know, it's not every day you get a Totti or a Del Piero or, you know, hopefully an Insigne or a Hamsik that will stay with the club forever. These guys are going to leave. But, I mean, I think that Cavani gets an applause. Especially the comments that he made about the team as soon as after Higuain did leave. I think he came out and said he'd never have done something like that. And you know, for reasons because of that, you know, I think he gets a standing ovation, if you ask me.
I think he gets an ovation now, especially over the, you know, the two false starts or whatever you want to call them, with him coming back potentially 2 years ago and then, or 3 years ago and then last year. I think he gets an ovation now. He did get booed pretty heavily when he came back for that sort of like pre-negotiated friendly we got after we sold him to PSG. But I think the way Higuain left sort of puts a big exclamation point on the yes for me. I think when PSG comes, Cavani gets cheered, and probably a pretty big one at that.
I agree with you guys. I think he will get a massive cheer, and I do think that the way Higuain left kind of gave not an out so much, but the way Cavani has very publicly, not once, not twice, but I think even three or four times, has went on record to, you know, blast Higuain and say that he could never treat the Neapolitans like that, and he would never do that to the fans, and they would never join Juve and never pull on their shirt and all that kind of thing. So I think the way Higuain left has given him a kind of platform to use Higuain as an example, as to, you know, I would never do that, you know, because he also, you know, the way he left, and there was a wee bit kind of bad blood, and, you know, De Laurentiis had a bit of a moan at, you know, the fact he was money motivated and all that kind of stuff. So I think the Higuain thing was pretty much a kind of perfect storm for him. That it did give him that little kind of pariah that he could use to, you know, hold up and go, look, yeah, I may have left, but I didn't do it the way he did it. So, yeah. You know, and I would never do it the way he done it, and I would never pull their colours on and all that kind of stuff. So I think that does give him that little bit of leeway. But, you know, time's a great healer.
Yeah, there was nothing secretive about Cavani's departure.
Yeah, he wanted to leave. He went to PSG, and that was that. There was no medicals in secret in different countries and blood tests that were leaked on the internet and all this kind of crap that happened with Higuain. So, yeah.
Disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, Higuain will always be booed. Doesn't matter who he plays for whenever he comes back to San Paolo. It's not just the fact that he joined Juve. It's the way he done it. It was underhand. It was two-faced. It was a betrayal. Slap in the face and a spit in the face to everyone who'd ever cheered him. But no, Cavani will hopefully be cheered, or at least, you know, I don't say cheered. I know, as if they're going to, if he puts one in the top corner, they're not going to stand up and go, oh, what a strike, you know.
You mean they're not going to put on Twitter, thanks for your amazing goal against us?
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's just such a loser mentality. I'm sorry. And if any UV fans are listening, I'm sorry. That's absolute bullshit. You have just, yes, we get you've signed them, but you are putting a clip on your Twitter page.
Yeah, of him knocking you out of the Champions League, essentially.
Him scoring, the greatest goal that he himself has said he's ever scored. But because he's now your player and he got the goal of the year or goal of the tournament, you're like, oh, well done, Cristiano. What a finish. It's against you. Just because he plays for you doesn't mean you should be celebrating the fact that he punted you out of Europe.
Jesus.
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I did have a laugh at that. And I did like, there was one of the replies that someone put up was that gif of the guy just kind of squinting and it goes, what the fuck? It's like, it was just like, and I think much summed up everybody's reaction, because like, he's scoring against you and you're applauding it.
I mean, to be fair, the the crowd did applaud the goal. I mean, it was a
it makes it even worse. Amazing goal. It makes it worse. Cheer against the guy scoring.
But that was before
you.
He was even.
Come on now. Get out of here. It's
ridiculous mentality. Sorry.
What a goal, Cristiano. It was great. It was
Thank
so
you
good.
For knocking us out of Europe, man.
What a guy.
That Ronaldo's a stand-up guy. Do you see that overhead kick that he scored, man? Goal of the year against us, but it doesn't matter. Applaud it anyway. Oh, sorry. I'm all for appreciating quality, but I think championing a goal just because the guy now plays for you whenever he scored it against you to knock you out of Europe effectively is a bit
you couldn't even put something cheeky like, hey, congratulations, but that really sucked or something. Like, it was just like, wow, that was just so great. You're really done well.
You could have put something like, yeah, Chiellini would like to, you know, thank
you
for making him look like an idiot. That was just madness. But anyway, I'm going to wrap this up here now, guys. That's us just hit the hour mark. Nice and short. The summer shows had kind of ran a wee bit, but we did have loads to talk about. So, as always, you can follow us on Twitter at SempreSSCNapoli. Find us online at SempreSSCNapoli.com. Lots of great stuff on there from the team and the contributors. We will be back after the international break. Fiorentina at home, then we will get ready for the Champions League. Until next time, guys, take care. Ciao ragazzi. Forza Napoli.
Sempre. Ale, ale, ale. Ale Napoli, ale. Ale, ale, ale. Ale Napoli, ale. E poi facevano così. Ale, 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 Napoli, ale.